John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for not, oh no, my phone's just sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is tie is this, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to This Week in Palestine, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for September 29th to October 5th, 2012. Amidst ongoing Israeli military attacks against Palestinian civilians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, Palestinians attempt to seek UN recognition for a non-member state with no answer. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Let us begin our weekly report with the nonviolent activities organized in the West Bank. Protests this week were organized in Kfur Kadum village in the northern West Bank and the central West Bank villages of Bilayin, Nilayin, and Nabi Saleh, as well as the village of El Masara in the southern West Bank. IMEMC's Ghassan Banoura with the story.
In Kfur Kadum village, Israeli soldiers attacked villagers and their international supporters as soon as they got to the main road leading in and out of the village. Troops arrested a British Solidarity activist and fired tear gas at protesters. Many were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation. The main road leading in and out of Kfur Kadum was closed by the Israeli military 10 years ago. Villagers were demanding it to be reopened. At the villages of Na'lin and Bil'in, many protesters were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation when Israeli soldiers stationed at the wall fired tear gas at them, as well as rubber-coated steel bullets. Villagers and their international supporters managed to march right up to the Israeli wall after the midday prayers before they were attacked by Israeli troops. In Na'lin, protesters were against the invitation of the Spanish team Barcelona to the Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit to appear in their game in Spain next Sunday. Gilad Shalit was taken by Palestinian resistance fighters when they attacked his post in Gaza. Shalit was released last year after an exchange deal between Palestinian groups and Israel was reached. At the nearby village of Nabi Saleh, many were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation, and two protesters suffered light wounds when Israeli soldiers attacked villagers and their supporters on Friday. The army attacked the unarmed protesters at the entrance of the village and did not allow them to reach lands taken from local farmers by Israel. Elsewhere on Friday, Israeli soldiers stationed at the village entrance of Al-Masara, southern West Bank, forced people back into the village using rifle butts and batons. No injuries were reported. For IMEMC News, this is Ghassan Bannoura.
This week, Israeli forces conducted at least 42 military incursions into Palestinian communities in the West Bank. During these incursions, Israeli troops arrested at least 14 Palestinians, including three children. Meanwhile, in Gaza, Israeli troops invaded the border areas near the central Gaza Strip and arrested three civilians. IMEMC's Salam Kumsia has more of the details.
On Monday, the body of a 16-year-old Palestinian youth was found near Beit Aira, an illegal Israeli settlement built on Palestinian lands that belonged to residents of Abud village near the central West Bank city of Ramallah. Initial reports said the cause of death is a sharp blow to the head, likely caused by a hit-and-run accident. The slain youth is a Bedouin living with his family and tribe near Abud village. Later in the week in Gaza, a Palestinian worker was killed, two other injured on Tuesday midday as a siege posting tunnel collapsed at the borders with Egypt in southern Gaza Strip. Last week, another worker was killed and two injured in a similar accident. Tuesday incident brings the number of Palestinians who have been killed in tunnel accidents to 206 since Israel started its siege on the Gaza Strip back in 2006. The siege has left Gazan hospitals out of basic and specialized supplies and equipments, an issue that has led to the death of more than 400 patients, including infants and children. On Wednesday, Israeli settlers started to build a new settlement on lands owned by Palestinian farmers from the village of Yanon in the North West Bank. Local sources said that Israeli bulldozers destroyed farmlands, then settlers arrived and installed caravans and water tanks. In related news, the Israeli Civil Administration Office in the occupied West Bank decided not to grant a group of settlers a permit to purchase a Palestinian home near the Ibrahimi Mosque in the southern West Bank city of Hebron. The settlers now have the option of contesting the ruling at the Israeli Military Court of Appeals. 6 months ago, a group of settlers broke into the home after claiming that they bought it. Several ministers of the extremist government coalition of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu showed support to the settlers and even visited them in the occupied property. The army earlier this year evicted the settlers while Prime Minister Netanyahu promised to examine the legality of the claimed purchase within a month. In Jerusalem this week, clashes started on Sunday between local youth and Israeli soldiers and ended late on Monday evening. Clash erupted at Ras Al Amud when soldiers arrested four Palestinian men accused of shooting at settlers. Israeli media announced that four soldiers were lightly wounded in the clashes. Staying in Jerusalem, later in this week, a group of Israeli settlers stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque under the protection of Israeli soldiers and celebrated Jews' holidays. According to local sources, the settlers attacked Muslim worshippers who were in the mosque. Meanwhile, another group of settlers spread the outer doors of a church in the Mount of Olives on Tuesday midday with hate words against local Palestinian Christians. For IMEMC News, this is Salam Komsiya.
For the second year in a row, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas applies the UN recognition of a Palestinian state, but this time as a non-member state. Abbas failed last year to win UN recognition of Palestine as a full member state. Meanwhile, Human Rights Watch reported on various human rights violations in the Hamas-ruled Gaza Strip. The details and more with IMEMC's Rami El-Maghari.
As Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas was speaking to the United Nations General Assembly earlier this week, more than 120 Palestinian youth in Gaza were convening their own model United Nations General Assembly. The United Nations in New York heard Abbas's demand, yet no decision was taken towards recognition of a Palestinian state on 1967 borders. In Gaza, the MUN by university graduates recognized Palestine as a UN member state. Rawia Shawa is an independent member of parliament in Gaza and a chairwoman for Gaza Cultural Development Group and co-founder of the MUN. She called on Abbas to reconsider the move at the UN.
We are wondering, we are asking our politicians outright, what kind of constant Palestinian rights in a time Israel has grabbed all Palestinian people lands, while the Palestinian constant rights turn to be unclear. I would like to say that these youth should be given the chance to think or create, because they have been neglected.
In the meantime, Israeli Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman attacked this week Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas by branding him a stumbling block to peacemaking between Israel and Palestinians. In the Gaza Strip, the Hamas-led Palestinian government strongly condemned ongoing Israeli settlement activities on the occupied Palestinian territories. It also called on Egypt to break the Israeli siege on Gaza by largely opening the Rafah crossing terminal to allow flow of goods and commodities in and out of the territory. Recently, Hamas organized demonstrations echoed the same demand, yet Cairo's ambassador to the Palestinian Authority in Ramallah, Yasser Othman, responded by saying that he and his country hoped that Hamas would have welcomed recent Egyptian ease of measures at the Rafah crossing terminal instead. Khalil Haya, a local Hamas leader in Gaza, said in a large celebration ceremony for the Islamic Jihadi group in Gaza that the peaceful settlement has failed. Al-Haya called for a comprehensive Palestinian national strategy that could help the Palestinian people get rid of the Israeli occupation. He emphasized on what he termed significance of the Palestinian resistance strategy. In another news, Human Rights Watch in New York reported this week on various human rights violations across the Hamas-ruled Gaza Strip. Among those violations are torture inside Hamas-run prisons, crackdown on citizens on political grounds, and ban of protests. The Hamas-led government denied the accusations and described the HRW's report as highly politicized and one-sided. Dr. Ibrahim Abrash is a leading political analyst in Gaza.
Actually, there is a huge amount of human rights violations in the Gaza Strip, despite what's happening in the West Bank. The report is about Gaza, and doesn't have to talk about the West Bank. In Gaza, there is a totally independent government. Therefore, the report must focus on Gaza Strip, not the West Bank. In Gaza, there are huge violations which human rights organizations has documented, but they weren't mentioned in the report.
For IMEMC News, I am Rami Al-Mighari in Gaza.
And that's all for today from This Week in Palestine. This was the weekly report for September 29th to October 5th, 2012, from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hussein Kassis and me, Anne Shirley.
In late 2001, gunmen from the U.S.-supported Northern Alliance, loyal to ethnic Hazara warlord Mohammed Mohaqiq, swept through the village of Kampirak, a mostly Pashtun enclave in northern Afghanistan, killing scores of villagers. The surviving women and girls were rounded up and sexually abused by the gunmen, reports News magazine In These Times. Since the start of America's 11-year intervention in Afghanistan, Western governments have pumped in over $60 billion to rebuild the Afghan economy, construct schools for girls, and subsidize health clinics. But none of that aid has made it to the women of Kampirak due to mismanagement and massive corruption under President Hamid Karzai. The Pashtun village has no electricity, little running water, and no health clinic. Over the last year, Taliban scouts have been seen near Kampirak, collecting a 10% tithe for jihad and threatening to kill anyone who helps the government. The Taliban have also destroyed cell phone towers, limiting mobile service. But villager Zar Bibi told a reporter, "The government has done nothing to help out. In contrast," she says, "the Taliban were good for security. We were always safe." Women's rights and social reform have always been a hard sell in Afghanistan. The high point for women's rights came during the Soviet occupation, when many urban women enrolled in college and worked outside the home. Reforms collapsed after the Soviets retreated and the fundamentalist Islamic Mujahideen took over. In the late 1990s, the Taliban burnt the last girls' school in Kampirak. And as of this date, it has not been rebuilt.
Afghanistan, 29th of September. U.S. troops resume joint patrols with Afghan forces. Trouble right away. Afghanistan, 30th of September. An Afghan soldier opened fire on U.S. troops at a checkpoint, killing one American soldier, one mercenary, and two Afghan government soldiers. The American soldier was the 2,000th American GI to be killed in Afghanistan, almost exactly a week before the 11th anniversary of the start of this war. Afghanistan, 1st of October. A suicide bomber wearing a police uniform detonated a motorcycle bomb that killed three American soldiers, four cops, and seven other people in Khost Province. There were also 37 people wounded. Afghanistan, 2nd of October. NATO is reporting the death of an American soldier from an IED attack in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 5th of October. Eight rockets were fired at Bagram Air Base, a notorious base of foreign occupation since the Russian War. Pakistan, 5th of October. Two trucks carrying supplies to U.S. and NATO forces in Afghanistan were burned in Balochistan, according to Press TV. The containers were forcibly stopped at Mashtung District near Quetta and burned, an official from the Balochistani government reported. On top of all else, it was reported last week that U.S. Special Forces are back in Iraq on some kind of anti-terrorism mission, and more will follow soon for training. Mission accomplished? I don't think so. Mr. Barack Obama, the Afghanistan war will have been going on for 11 years and almost three presidential terms. Tomorrow, the 6th of October. Don't let Romney re-escalate this for another 4 years or more if he takes power, and don't let him back into Iraq. Bring all the troops home today. This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com. In New York City, a right-wing group called the American Freedom Defense Initiative went to court to force the New York City subways to display posters reading, quote, "In any war between the civilized man and the savage, support the civilized man, support Israel, defeat jihad." These posters imply that all Muslims are savages. This is a vicious slur against every Muslim on the planet, not just Muslim fundamentalists. On the 25th of September, Egyptian-born journalist Mona Eltaway was arrested in New York City for using pink spray paint for covering up these offensive hate speech posters in a New York subway. Another woman supporting the offensive racist posters tried to block her paint, but she was able to get another shot of spray paint in every time her opponent left an opening, and eventually this confrontation attracted the cops to the scene. Here's a sound from a video of the entire incident.
Who are you?
My name is Pamela.
Okay.
Can you get out of the way, Pamela?
No.
Oh, you're Pamela Geller.
No.
No, which Pamela
are
you then?
Tell me, Mona.
Get out of my way.
Do you have to violate free speech?
I'm not violating it. I'm making an expression on free speech.
No,
if you don't want paint on yourself, you should get out of my way.
You cannot. You do not have a right.
I do, actually, and I'm doing it right now. And you should get out of my way. Do you want paint on yourself? Do you really?
Okay, fine.
Excellent. Defend racism. Defend racism. That's
you
right.
Have a lot of nerve.
Put your body between me and
you
racism.
You have a lot of nerve.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't have nerve. You know what I have? I have an understanding of racism.
You are violating free speech.
free speech.
I'm not. It's clear. I'm not violating.
You are violating free speech.
I am expressing myself freely against hate and racism.
This was an approved ad, Mona.
I really don't care.
Approved ad, Mona.
I don't care. Are you? You know what? Get off.
You're harming me.
Get off. I'm not touching
you.
Are you filming this?
You are spraying me.
Film this. Get off me. Get off me or I'm going to go get the police.
Go get the police.
Get off me.
Stop you.
Fuck you.
My God. Stop it, Mona!
Get out of my way!
Stop it, Mona!
I am not going to stop it!
Stop it!
I
Mona,
am not!
Hilda, hurry!
No, get
Mona,
my name
Hilda,
right!
Hurry.
Get my name right! My God, you sound like a film, a parody! You sound like a parody! I can push you too, you know?
Stop her!
You're under arrest.
Stop her for what she's doing!
Let me stop that!
Mona, stop it! I will not put it down!
You will put it down, you're under arrest!
For what?
For what?
For what?
You're under arrest.
For what?
Turn around.
For what? Tell me what I'm under arrest for. For what? I need to know what you're arresting me for. It's my right to know what you're arresting me for. It is my right as a US citizen to know what you're arresting me for. What are you arresting me for? Tell me. Tell me what you're arresting me for. Is everybody watching? What is he arresting me for? Yeah? Well, tell me what it is. I want to know what the charge is. I seriously want to know the charge. I'm expressing myself freely and I hurt no one. I hurt no one. This is non-violent protest. Non-violent protest. You see this, America? This is non-violent protest. This is what happens to non-violent protesters in America. In 2012,
you can injure somebody's eye by spraying paint.
She got in my way.
She got in my way.
I asked her to get out of my way peacefully, and she refused. Ask them.
I tried to
this
stop
is non-violent protest, and I will not stop protesting non-violently.
Hurt somebody by
I didn't hurt anyone. Yeah. There was no one here when I came.
I have almost injured this lady.
There was no one here. She put herself. She put herself this way.
Why didn't stop spray painting?
I asked her to get out of the way.
No, but why didn't stop spray painting? Let me hear that voice.
She
was pushing
me.
Why didn't stop spray painting?
Because I believe it's my right to spray. Because it's my right to non-violently protest, and she put herself between me and the poster. If you're on Twitter, tweet that Mona El Tahawi was arrested. MONAELTAHAWY. And my arrest.
How old are you?
I'm 45. And I'm Egyptian-American, and I refuse hate. What do you mean that's why? And I will continue to non-violently protest hate, and that is hate and racism. This is what happens in America when you non-violently protest.
That's true.
Now the same hate group that put the offensive anti-Islamic posters in the New York subways is trying to force the D.C. subways, our metro system, to play host to this same speech that sounds like it came from the mouths of the Ku Klux Klan. Metro's police are opposing this request on the grounds that they've been receiving threats that may be related to these posters. For once, the Metro Transit police are absolutely right. There's no excuse for endangering the safety of people in a confined environment in public transit by playing host to provocative hate speech that can set people off. Metro may open doors, but please, Metro, don't open the door to hate and violence. On the 4th of October, veterans backed by Occupy DC staged a day-long protest in front of the Department of Veterans Affairs. This was just 2 days before the 11th anniversary of the start of the war. Here's what one of the participants had to say about the military's approach to training soldiers and its effect on people.
Oh yeah, they will tell you right to your face, we're going to break you. We're going to break you, and you're going to be how we want you to be. But luckily, I came out unscathed, fairly unscathed, and I didn't really get robotic. I did what they told me to do, but I kept my peace of mind and my own way of thinking.
Before training comes recruiting. And military recruiters are among the few salesmen that could sell the Brooklyn Bridge to bystanders. Scams have been especially bad in the National Guard, with recruits being led to believe they would serve 4 years of part-time duty, only to serve 8 years with rotations to Iraq and Afghanistan. Whatever happened to one weekend a month?
Really, I thought I was signing up for 4 years. Oh. And the fine print really tells you no. You signed up for 8 years.
Surprise.
But the average person that signed this, they're not thinking about that. And
they're thinking they're signing up for 4 years. They're thinking there's no way I'm going to be able to afford college. There's no way I'm going to graduate into debt slavery. So maybe I'll do something honorable and fight for my country. Only to learn that my country's selling us out for illegal wars for profit and resources. And they're worse than bad timeshare salespeople, because they'll just keep you.
But when you're in the recruiting office, all you're worried about is the boot camp, man.
That's it.
You're not even thinking.
Who's fighting all these wars in Iraq and Afghanistan? Who do they say? They tell you, though, if you join the National Guard, you're going to help natural disaster victims and people right here at home. And then all of a sudden you find yourself on a plane headed to Iraq.
They got some food.
That's
what your mission is for. So how is that working out in that manner?
You know, a lot of people's eyes are awakening right now. That's all I can say.
During the protest at the Department of Veterans Affairs, some of the protesters read out the names of GIs who have committed suicide while deployed or afterwards. The suicide rate of deployed soldiers and veterans has been beyond belief, and not for the first time. During and after the Vietnam War, twice as many GIs committed suicide as were killed in action, and the current wars are well on course to match this ugly trend.
And no amount of money you could give. I ain't going back again. I ain't going back again. You won't see me back there again. No, you won't see me back there again.
On the week of the 29th of September, running until the 7th of October, Occupy DC staged a series of protests and direct actions to mark the first anniversary of the founding of Occupy DC on the 1st of October, 2011. Occupy DC began the week with a surprise. Simultaneous foreclosures or blockades at every branch of Bank of America that is normally open on Saturdays in downtown DC, all 11 of them. Protesters grabbed the banks and Occupy tape that looks like crime scene tape and held banners or signs announcing that the bank was closed. All 11 branches were closed for at least part of their normal Saturday hours as a result. Here's what things sound like as police pushed protesters back from the Bank of America in Columbia Heights.
Put up. Put this up. Got it.
I think you need to think about the Reverend right over there, whose home we're actually trying to defend.
That's the sound of cops stripping Occupy tape and foreclosure signs off the entrance to the bank.
These demonstrations and the police have chosen not to.
Everybody move away from the door. Do not block the door. Thank you.
Sure. But we don't mind making things a little inconvenient for Bank of America, which has just been making things inconvenient for people across the country for a very long time, including Reverend Van Zandt.
These protests were staged in an effort to force Bank of America to cease and desist their illegal and fraudulent attempts to foreclose on the home of Reverend Van Zandt, whose mortgage was one of Countrywide's crooked accounts.
A little over 4 years ago, I became disabled. In 2009, I realized that my income was going to change by 40%. My income was going to drop by 40%. And I started calling what was at that time, Countrywide, and told them that my income is going to change for the next few months or so because I run out of leave. I'm now starting to receive disability payments. I had a disability insurance, but I had taken it out on myself. And I said, but the income is going to be different. Then I applied for long-term disability through Social Security. And that process itself, for those who don't know, takes 2 years.
Meanwhile, Reverend Van Zandt managed to remain current on his mortgage, but he requested a modification from Countrywide, and what they told him was, you're not behind, you need to miss payments in order to qualify for a rate reduction. Then when he took their advice, they turned around and tried to foreclose on him. Here's what people had to say about that at another Bank of America branch over on Mount Pleasant Street.
They say eviction, we say no. Reverend Van Zandt will not go.
Reverend Van Zandt has been a resource to this community for decades. He's allowed sick people, homeless people, people in desperate straits into his home. He's made his house available to the community for meetings, for storage, to support his church. And now Bank of America wants to end all that and throw him out on the streets. Reverend Van Zandt became disabled several years ago. At that point, he asked for a modification and Bank of America told him to miss payments to become eligible. They refused to negotiate with him after he did what they told him to do. And now they're trying to take his home. Does that sound right?
No!
It's not just Reverend Van Zandt either. Millions of people around this country have been defrauded and foreclosed on by Bank of America and other major banks that survived the crisis only with our money. We need to tell these banks to stop foreclosing on us.
Throw them overboard for credit union. Throw them overboard for credit union. Throw them overboard for credit union.
What do we do with Bank of America? What do we do with Bank of America? What do we do with Bank of America? Rely in the morning. Stop foreclosing our community. Stop foreclosing our community. Stop foreclosing our community.
The protests at 11 branches of Bank of America that normally open on Saturdays continued until noon, when the branches closed, except for the Columbia Heights branch, which remains open till 1 o'clock. So at noon, all the protesters who centered on that branch were there for another hour, and when cops tried to order people off the sidewalk because they thought it was getting too crowded, people did the natural thing and took the streets. It was a very bad day for Bank of America in Washington, D.C., and this was just the beginning of Occupy D.C.'s anniversary reoccupation. October, the first anniversary of Occupy D.C. setting up in Washington, D.C., Occupy D.C. vowed to storm K Street and proceeded to deliver on that promise, storming the offices of Cargill, which makes genetically modified organisms and is known to be involved in slave trading, and storming the offices of JBG, a developer responsible for a great deal of gentrification in D.C.
1 a.m.
Protesters stormed the doors of Cargill's offices. The police were caught with their pants down, and lots of protesters got inside.
March!
Eventually, cops started pushing to keep any more protesters from getting in, but it was too late. Plenty had entered the building. K Street, protesters swarmed back out into the streets, visiting a variety of lobbyists and other corporate targets such as Douglas Development, the American Bankers Association, BP, Monsanto, JP Morgan Chase, before ultimately storming another building, the headquarters of developer JBG, responsible for a great deal of gentrification in D.C.
Like, oh yeah. Earlier in the protests, a very interesting thing came up when everyone was at Monsanto. It was announced that Monsanto is refusing to serve in their own cafeteria their own genetically modified foods.
Or not!
On the 1st of October, Occupy DC swore that they were going to storm K Street, and it looks like they managed to do exactly that. They even went back out again just a few hours later, visiting the offices of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Bloomfield Properties, the people who evicted Occupy Wall Street, and Pepco, DC's infamous electrical utility. Target list. Pepco's terrible service. JBG throwing so many people out of their homes. Bloomfield Properties evicting Occupy Wall Street for complaining about it. Monsanto with their genetically modified seeds. The American Bankers Association. Cargill with their slave labor. And so many others all over K Street. Occupy DC had warned that they were going to storm K Street on the 1st of October. And when push comes to shove, they did exactly that. On the 3rd of October, beginning at about 3 p.m., Occupy DC marched once again out into K Street and once again stormed into the polished lobbies of the 1%. After failures to gain entry to Bank of America and the American Bankers Association, Occupy DC stormed into a Verizon wireless store, protesting both Vera Greedy's union busting and Verizon's practice of voluntarily cooperating with illegal domestic spying programs that began under George W. Bush.
That's it. Verizon. Union busting Verizon.
We would like the customers to know
that
Verizon
Right across the street from Verizon was a branch of Wells Fargo Bank, the notorious investor in the Geo Group, one of the largest builders of private prisons in the United States, owner of Rivers Correctional Institution, to which so many D.C. residents have been sent. The Wells Fargo branch, too, was stormed by Occupy D.C.
In we go. Wells Fargo.
Managed to get people out of Wells Fargo Bank, but that didn't stop Occupy DC from storming through the outer set of doors of PNC Bank a little later. The cops got much more pushy about keeping people from getting all the way into PNC, so the mic check was held outside.
PNC Bank!
PNC Bank!
Really seems! To want to keep the truth from their customers!
To want to keep the truth from their customers!
And they have good reason!
And they have good reason!
Mountaintop Removal Mining! Destroys communities!
Destroys communities!
Poisons children!
Poisons children!
Poisons the elderly!
Poisons the elderly!
Leaves mountains!
Leaves mountains!
Level!
Level!
For all future generations!
For all future generations!
And the coal that is burnt!
And the coal that is burnt!
Makes a future impossible for humanity!
Makes a future impossible for humanity!
As it exacerbates!
As it exacerbates!
Global warming!
Global warming!
Climate change!
Climate change!
And ocean acidification!
And ocean acidification!
Is there any...
Speaking of people who invest in extractive industries and destroying natural resources, the march culminated with a half-hour blockade of the IMF and World Bank's InfoShop bookstore. And in front of the World Bank's main building, this call was made for national, even global mobilization to protest and shut down the spring meetings of the IMF and World Bank in April 2013.
Next year in April.
We'll be having their annual conference.
We'll be having their annual conference.
We're putting out a call.
We're putting out a call.
To activists from coast to coast.
To activists from coast to coast.
From the North Pole to the South Pole.
From the North Pole to the South Pole.
Come to D.C.
Come to D.C.
In April.
In April.
Let's shut down.
Let's shut down.
The IMF World Bank Conference.
The IMF World Bank Conference.
Be the first time we've done it.
It won't be the first time we've done it.
And it won't be the last.
And it won't be the last.
But we can't do it without you. All of you watching on live stream.
All of you watching online.
All of you standing on the sidewalks.
All of you standing on the sidewalks.
To end neoliberal tyranny.
And all of you watching on live leak too.
It takes courage.
Shut down the IMF.
You heard that? Occupy DC has issued a call for national and global mobilization to shut down the April 19th to 21st, 2013 spring meetings of the IMF and World Bank the way it was done in April 2000. Repeat. National and global call to shut down the IMF and World Bank spring meetings from April 19th to April 21st, right here in Washington, D.C. Since the 24th of September, the courageous activists of Tar Sands Blockade have been physically blocking construction of the Keystone XL tar sands oil pipeline in Texas, where construction of the southern leg has already started. Tree sits, protesters locking themselves to heavy equipment, and even an incident where a Houston resident locked himself to an underground capsule have blocked the route and prevented TransCanada from clear-cutting trees in that area. TransCanada is attempting to bypass the blockade by clear-cutting a path around the blockade in areas not on the plans and for which they have no permits to cut anything. In addition, TransCanada has egged on sickening police violence and endangered protesters with the actions of their employees. In two incidents on the 1st of October, a TransCanada employee attempted to forcibly remove tree sitters by either trying to drop a tree on them or swinging a felled tree at the supports of their platform. Both incidents involve the same operator of the same feller buncher, a heavy machine that cuts and stacks trees. Just 5 hours before that incident, sheriff's deputies resorted to outright torture in an attempt to force Shannon Beebe and Benjamin Franklin to unlock themselves from heavy equipment. With TransCanada employees watching, these pigs twisted Shannon and Ben's arms, put Ben in a chokehold, and blasted both of them with pepper spray. Then, after discussion with the TransCanada goons, the cops proceeded to use a taser to shock Shannon and Ben multiple times. The electrical jolts from a taser and sparks from the probes can set someone on fire if their clothing is soaked in pepper spray. Afterwards, John, the senior TransCanada supervisor, openly congratulated the sheriff's department on, quote, a job well done, to which he responded, quote, if this happens again, we'll just skip to using pepper spray and tasing in the first 10 minutes. Here's why people are risking being tortured or even killed to physically obstruct the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline.
And I'm here to take a stand in solidarity with a family who has been coerced into giving up part of their land to TransCanada so they can put the Keystone XL pipeline through. This is a highly dangerous pipeline, and you know, I'm not okay with the idea of eminent domain for private profit. I'm not okay with a pipeline that has already spilled countless times. I'm not okay with the health effects that people in Houston and Port Arthur are going to have to bear who live near refineries and who will not see the benefit from it. And I'm also here because our generation and people need to. You know, people need to take a stand on the climate crisis. I'm here, standing up for the health of people where I live. I'm here standing up for our future and for the environment. This project is a disaster from beginning to end, from the extraction all the way down line. So I have the ability to come take action, and I hope that other people do as well. I encourage folks to come and join and to, come down and help out a little bit or, come do an action.
Last week, a group of local Texas environmental activists and their supporters from around the country began a nonviolent direct action protest to stop construction of the 435-mile southern leg of the Keystone XL pipeline, which is scheduled to be built between Cushing, Oklahoma and Port Arthur, Texas. The pipeline is being built to bring tar sands oil from Alberta, Canada, to refineries on the Gulf Coast. Some protesters have been arrested, while others are maintaining a tree sit on the property where construction has begun. The Keystone Pipeline is organized into a four-phase project. The first two phases were completed a few years ago. The company constructing the pipeline, TransCanada, hoped to build Phase 3, the portion from Texas to Oklahoma, and then move on to build Phase 4, the pipeline that will extend into Canada. The Obama administration delayed approval of Phase 4 pending further environmental review. That was in response to one of the largest environment-themed protest campaigns in many years that included the arrest of more than 1,200 persons in a series of nonviolent civil disobedience actions in front of the White House just over a year ago. That protest was followed by a November action where some 10,000 activists surrounded the White House in order to persuade Obama to put a hold on the project. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus spoke with Ron Seifert, a spokesperson with the Tar Sands Blockade Coalition, who talks about support for and opposition to the pipeline project in Texas and the latest news on the protest actions there.
One of the primary concerns we face from East Texans and, well, Texans in general, is how this pipeline will affect their limited water supply. We all know Texas is a drought-stricken region, although East Texas tends to be a little greener and have a little bit more water than most of the state. It's not the typical desert western environment that we're used to seeing in the cowboy movies. Nonetheless, this pipeline will cross all the major water sources for the big metro areas in Texas. People don't necessarily know that this product, tar sands, is not crude oil. It's a different substance. It's a synthetic slurry. Tar sands is solid in its natural state, so it has to be boiled and diluted with chemicals, gas condensates, and all sorts of nasty, carcinogenic, toxic chemicals. And additionally, it's pumped at very high pressure, at over roughly 1,200 psi, 50% higher pressure than a conventional pipeline. So you have this melted, liquefied sandpaper mixed with toxic chemicals that's being blasted at high pressures through a steel pipe. It's a recipe for disaster. So clean water, and not to mention the arable soil in East Texas, are certainly parts of our commons and our environment that Texans hold near and dear, not only because of what it means to them as farmers and ranchers and landowners in the area, but what it means for their collective communities and their future overall.
Ron Seifert, in terms of jobs, you know, in terms of energy security, importing, where this would be importing energy from Canada rather than from the Middle East, has the project generated much support among the local population? I guess what I'm asking is, are the protesters out of the mainstream, or are locals behind it as well?
Well, there's an interesting conflict of traditionally conservative values that exist around this pipeline battle. Yes, it is the case that in Texas and Oklahoma, there's a lot of support from the ground up for the oil and gas industry and this value of unfettered energy expansion. But there's this also strong traditional conservative value of land rights and property ownership. And now these values are at conflict because of the pipeline. So what have traditionally been strongly protected, constitutionally protected, in fact, land rights are being trampled in the interest of energy expansion. So when it comes down to it, when local community folks, small town, everyday people that traditionally do support oil and gas have to choose between their own homes and their own ranches and the oil and gas industry, especially at the multinational level, that's not bringing any local support to their economy, you find a lot of folks think this idea of using eminent domain to bolster and increase private gains for private corporations is unacceptable. So from a land rights point of view, you have a lot of folks turning away from this project and supporting eminent domain reform, taking a stand against the idea that a foreign corporation can seize American property for its own private gain and that the government is going to be complicit in that transaction. It's really unconscionable and it's offensive to a lot of folks around here. So we do have this kind of unique alliance where you have environmentalists and climate activists coming at this from one angle, and conservatives, some folks that are with more affiliate with the Tea Party politics, feeling that the idea that big government or big corporate multinational industry having these powers, having these tools of eminent domain is unacceptable, that it's a freedom that we're entitled as Americans, the right to our properties, and that they should not be imperiled with such nonchalance.
Can you just please summarize what's been happening with the protest on the ground?
So the tar sands blockade is a rolling, nonviolent civil disobedience campaign. And on multiple occasions, individual blockaders have put themselves in the way of construction to literally stop the Keystone XL pipeline line from being built. That's been met with different levels of police response from, in one occasion, the police simply doing nothing and washing their hands of it and walking away and leaving the blockaders to hold the construction site. To the worst case, police brutalizing blockaders, choking them, putting them in stress positions, tasing them, pepper spraying them, virtually torturing them. What's going on now, and has been going on for the last week, is our aerial tree blockade. It's a tree village and a timber wall that have been constructed spanning over 500 feet of the proposed pipeline route, tying in more than a dozen old growth trees. Nine different blockaders are sitting in trees or along a catwalk of this timber wall, freestanding wall of wood that was constructed in the middle of the forest. And those folks have dug in. They have ample food and supplies for weeks, and they're willing to do whatever they can to stay as long as it takes to stop the pipeline and raise enough awareness to encourage folks not only to come and join them in Texas, but to send the message that resistance is possible.
That was Ron Seifert, a spokesperson with the group Tar Sands Blockade in Texas. Find more information on the campaign to stop the Keystone XL pipeline by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.